This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
On a windy, rainy day up here, kind of surprised weather. I often joke that the tagline for Zen should be Zen colon surprise, because when you're paying attention, we're basically always surprised. How many of you, is this the first time you've driven up to Jikoji? Could you raise your hands high? Okay, it's a lot of you. I always am interested to know what, you know, compels you to drive up that windy road, maybe with somebody tailgating you all the way up, especially the first time, to sit here in this quiet place, facing yourself in this wall. Something brought you here. Something brought me here too. Maybe it's just curiosity, or maybe there's some little seed. I'm cheating today. I'm going to start with a poem. This poem is by Todd Boss. It is enough and the Terry in a temple. It has come just so far. You need not be opened anymore than the standing you need and as a door standing ajar. Some of you had beginning meditation instruction this morning. Can you show me how you feel the quiet support of this place, and that you had a moment perhaps in the small zendo to zoom out as if you're a little telescope yourself, zoomed out? We can sometimes notice the constantly changing landscape inside. And we can rest for a few minutes in what's here right now and only that. We can watch the landscape change, come and go, come and go, come and go. And Jikoji is a safe place to let go of some of our ideas about ourselves and rest quietly in that door that's ajar, that open place, as the poet says. Of course, everywhere is a safe place to practice, but I'm glad you found your way here today to practice with us. I have to say, I feel like I'm new here too today. It's my first time too. I know I'm my way around. I've been practicing here for some years, but I'm just right now arriving with you to this seat for the first time to receive and participate in this teaching seat. I'm just moving my life to move to Jikoji and practice here every day. So as I sit here this morning, it feels as if I am saying my first words as a guiding teacher here, even though I have given talks before as a guiding teacher, but today it's official. And these are my first words. Take care. I actually feel I could stop there and just let you think about that for the rest of the week, for the rest of your life. But lunch isn't ready, so I'll say some more words about taking care. Sitting here in this seat, it's my responsibility to take care of the lineage of Kobun Chino Otagawa Roshi. I opened the doors to the Kaisanda this morning so you could see him. He's on the altar in there. Thankfully, I'm not doing this alone. I'm just one of many caretakers here, and that includes you. because I'm moving into Jikoji to live here, I've been standing in that open doorway, the other caretakers. I'm watching how the caretakers here take care. They're raking leaves or warming a zendo or making lunch for us all today, or the endless cleaning and fixing and cleaning, or the temple duties, or the Zumuten, Shoho Roshi, Judy, Chuck, Karn, all of these regulars who show up, Rain, and more who aren't here today, who are online today. I am so grateful that we arrived together to practice together. And in everything that they're doing, they're taking care of us. Just we finished a sesshin here, one of our regular week-long meditation retreats. Kobun Chino set up for a year, and this was one of those called Rohatsu. During these longer retreats, we have many periods of zazen. It is basically from morning until evening, with breaks for walking and eating. And what is it? The whole time is in silence, and we eat orioki style. For those of you who don't know what orioki, kind of orchestrated dance, a choreography of three bowls and a spoon and a little cleaning stick and chopsticks and a lot of hand signals and bells and clappers and food. And everything is done. How about now? Yeah? Yay. Okay. Sorry about that. I was talking about orioki and how not to be greedy. Can you hear me all right, friends out there? Yeah? Okay. So in meals, like orioki, as in life, we all have to learn to take care, to take just enough of what we need, and no more. No less, but no more, whilst keeping in mind that everyone else has needs too. And so since I've been living here, I've been reflecting about taking care. It has this expression of enough, just enough, I think at its heart, which is to say, can we accept what's here in this moment as enough all the time? And then the other question that arises for me is, are we enough? Just like this, as we are. Is it okay to be just enough? One of the joyful tasks of being a teacher in our tradition is giving the precepts to those who've decided that this practice is their path. And we have a Jukai ceremony coming up in January. Ocean Sensei and I will give the precepts to 10 students here. They're from all over the country and Europe, and they're coming to take their vows. For the last year, they've been studying the Bodhisattva precepts. They've sewn a rakusu, like Akudo is wearing right there. They've sewn themselves a rakusu, a Buddha's robe. And at their Jukai ceremony, they're going to receive orioki bowls, as well as a Dharma name. So in the midst of finding the right name for each person, which is really a joyful thing, I conferred with Jiro. Some of you know Jiro. He's our, I don't know, he's a national treasure, and he lives here. I wanted one of my students to have a name that expressed an understanding of just enough, but I really couldn't name her Orioki. That would not go over well. So I was trying to express to him that, how can I find a way of saying this? And I was thinking about the ancient philosopher Lao Tzu. He has this line, maybe you've heard it. He who knows that enough is enough will always have enough. And sitting with Jiro the other night, what he told me is this term, which I'd never heard of, chi soku, chi soku. Chisoku is composed of two kanji. The first is chi, which means know, wisdom, and soku, which means sufficiency. So chisoku, knowing sufficiency. Now, it may not be like a huge leap for any of us to know sufficiency eating oryoki, right? Because we're paying attention. We know how much we should take. We know how much is left in the bowl. And we see all these other hungry souls. It's not so hard there. It's not rocket science to pay attention to your greed and desire at the oryoki table. But in life, how often do we acknowledge we've had enough? It's enough. Either that we're satisfied, content even, with what life has delivered, and even when it's not what we expected. So has anybody here experienced life so far as delivering what you expected? Please raise your hand. No, me neither. Anybody online? Did I miss anybody? No. That's what I thought. So if we use ourselves as a little telescope again, we can zoom out further to ask yet another question. Can we accept that where we find ourselves in any given moment is sufficient? Chisoku. It's enough, even when it feels like not enough or too much. That question might pertain to how you found yourselves here today, sitting quietly facing the wall. Perhaps someone inside of each of us already knows that the practice of chisoku, knowing sufficiency, is a path to peace, everyday peace. Knowing sufficiency doesn't show itself in bright colors, and it is a season of bright colors. In the frenzy of Christmas, when I look at the world, it seems like there's no end to our desire. Desire sells, and we buy it. And after we bought it, up springs a new desire, like lickety-split. Desires really are inexhaustible. Human desire has no upper limit. We have to make a conscious decision to pay attention, to take care of this moment, to really pause, to maybe even draw a little line for ourselves and say, enough. And unless we do that, unless we draw a line for ourselves, unless we choose to pay attention and observe what's here in this moment to know sufficiency, then we will be consumed by our desire to consume. It's an endless hunger, and it can take over our lives. And of course, it's not just with food and material stuff. This applies to our need for attention. It applies to our need to be noticed. It applies to our need to feel special. It applies to our need to feel acknowledged in our jobs. We can substitute anything to fill that sense of void that something is missing. When will it ever be enough if our happiness depends on something out there? In the midst of observing our own desires for stuff and attention and recognition, in the midst of wanting things to be just different than the way they are in any given moment, we can practice chisoku, knowing sufficiency. We can draw the line and put an end for that moment to our kind of self-torment. And by the way, chisoku is not ostentatious minimalism. You can't say no to everything. You can't force contentment by giving all of our junk. Although, think about my garage, I think it might be helpful. Chisoku really requires a deeper dive. The founder of the Soto School, of which we're a member, the founder of that school in Japan, Eihei Dogen, wrote about knowing satisfaction. It was his final essay before he died. And I think about it as being both people, pay attention. This is your life. These are my instructions to you for the rest of your life. And also his last words. He has a fascicle called Eight Awakenings of Great Beings in Japanese, Hachi Dainangaku. And these are the first two of the eight awakenings of great beings. Unsurprisingly, they are one, having little desire, and two, knowing satisfaction. Now, it seems to me that if you have little desire, knowing satisfaction is going to come pretty easy. But nevertheless, he separates them out. Have little desire, no satisfaction. And this is what he writes. All Buddhas are great beings. What great beings practice is called the eight awakenings. Practicing these awakenings is the basis for nirvana. This is the last teaching of our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, which he gave on the night he entered parinirvana. The first awakening is to have few desires, to refrain from widely coveting the objects of the five senses is called few desires. The Buddha said, monks know that people who have many desires intensely seek for fame and gain, and therefore they suffer a great deal. Those who have few desires do not seek for fame and gain and are free from them, and they are without troubles. Having few desires is itself worthwhile. It is even more desires need not flatter to gain others' favor. Those who have few desires are not pulled by their sense organs. They have a serene mind. They do not worry because they are satisfied with what they have and do not have a sense of lack. Those who have few desires experience nirvana. This is called few desires. The second awakening is to know how much is enough. Even if you already have something, you set a limit for yourself for using it. So you should know how much is enough. The Buddha said, monks, if you want to be free from suffering, you should contemplate knowing how much is enough. By knowing it, you are in the place of enjoyment and peacefulness. If you know how much is enough, you are content even when you sleep on the ground. If you don't know it, you are discontented even when you are in heaven. You can feel poor even if you have much wealth. You can be constantly pulled by the five sense desires and pitied by those who know how much is enough. This is called to know how much is enough. All of that is from Kaz Tanahashi's translation. There are many translations of Dogen. I happen to like that one. And I've just discovered it's searchable on Kindle. So you can look up one word in Dogen. It's pretty cool. So perhaps some of us think what we have is not enough. We think we need more. Or maybe we need something else, please. Or of what we're getting. I want that. I don't want that. That age-old definition of suffering. Or dis-ease. How much time of our lives do we spend ourselves, if only I had this, or if only I had that, or if only that person was the way I wanted him or her or them to be, then I'd be happy. Knowing sufficiency means to know that whatever we have in any given moment is already enough. Whatever life has delivered in this moment is enough. Even when it doesn't feel like enough, even when it feels like too much. One time many years ago, someone was very upset with me, a Zen person, by the way, and she called me on the phone and she was yelling at me. It was like a cartoon. I was holding the phone out here. It was so loud. And I was standing in my bathroom holding the phone out here and I was watching my resistance to what she was saying arise. I was watching my defensiveness. I was about begging to formulate responses. I couldn't wait to pounce. And suddenly something shifted. And I heard the sound of her voice out here. And I realized this person was truly suffering. It was like our instinct to pick up a baby that's crying. You know, you hear a baby cry. Most of us hear a baby cry and go, shh. You want to help. It just shifted like that. Something shifted so profoundly. And right then, in that moment, I knew that there was no one here, no Nenza, no Pamela here, who had to defend. I didn't have to do anything. All I could do is stand there. And the image that came to my mind in that moment was, I'm a tree, and my roots are deep, and my leaves are out. And this is wind blowing through my leaves. I'm going to let it blow. And that did. And in that moment, I knew something. I had everything I needed. I knew sufficiency. Take it. So I just let her blow. That momentary awareness that I could stand what was happening, even though I didn't like it, that I could be okay with what was happening, even content to let it happen, that was a real changing point in my life. It was probably my first taste of knowing that I was tasting knowing sufficiency. In the face of these apparent difficulties, I knew it was okay. Everything was okay, even so. It was the first time I knew I was content in my discontent. I could be okay, even when things were terrible. That has continued to bloom, to support me in the facing of lots of big changes in my life, including grief. So here's the big question that perhaps some of you brought up the hill this morning. Can we face what the universe is delivering to us in any given moment? Can we move like a tree with the winds? Can we see everything we call the situation or the problem as okay right here, as it is? Well, this is what we do here. And hopefully out there, this is our practice. It's this way that we, as viewer of reality, and the viewed reality are not separate. They do not stand separate. They're not apart. They occupy a continuum. When we practice with knowing satisfaction, we experience reality as us and us as reality without a separation. This practice of chisoku, of knowing satisfaction, reminds us to observe and gently acknowledge our desire for things to be different, and then letting that desire be here, be okay, acknowledging that it's okay to feel that, and also that it is enough. And this is a mental state that we cultivate. Perhaps you don't like a relationship you're in, or the house you're in, or the car you're in, or the clothes you wear. Someone the other day told me she didn't like her feet. Maybe you haven't settled on a career, or you don't like your job, or you don't like your waistline, or you don't like your anger issues, or you don't like your knees. Perhaps you think there's something better over there. Raise your hand if any of that sounds familiar. Yeah. When we practice with knowing satisfaction, we have the opportunity to be sufficient as this person with the waistline that we don't like and the feet we don't like, with this anger problem, with this job, with this car, with this house, with this partner, with these difficult relationships. Knowing satisfaction practice allows us to be sufficient as the one who's actually here right now, not some imagined better version. This is not a self-improvement project. How would it be if we decided to accept ourselves like and accept each other like this? To just take care of each other as this one. If she's angry, if she's gained weight, if she's lost weight, Just take care of this one, who is sometimes joyful and funny and delightful and loving, and also apparently overweight and cranky. When we know satisfaction, a million possibilities are waiting for us to creatively respond to this as it is moment, just the way it is. You're not stuck. And we don't have to wait to be any other version of ourselves to respond, for anything else to arrive, to lose the weight or change a job or get a handle on our anger. You don't have to wait for life to transform or for you to transform. You can transform yourself in the moment of taking care of this as it is. To be with the life that life has given you in this moment, reality delivered this, and that is enough. But it's a practice. In his last essay, Dogen is telling us, if you really want to be free of suffering, you have to choose. You have to choose to let reality, that's reality, the big R, that means the whole thing, everything. Everything that's right here and right now, you have to let it be enough. You can stop running to the next thing, want something else. We can sit down at this moment, take care of this moment. And we can stop chasing the better place. And we practice with Chisoku, with bring satisfaction. We recognize we're already enough, just like this. Fragile, perfect. And by doing this is how we take care of our hearts. And this is how we take care of our minds. It takes care of our mental states if we're willing to just meet what's here. Take a breath and meet this. Not yesterday, not tomorrow, this. When we do that, we see our wholeness. No separation between us and the world. So to know sufficiency is to accept right in the middle of your complicated, messy, heartbreaking life that there is actually no longing, no lack, no dissatisfaction. That right now, as messy as it is, there is enough for you to be happy, right? Like this, to be fulfilled with what is here right now. It's possible to be happy with nothing else changing. Even in the midst of your discontent, you can be happy. It's just practice, nothing magical. Of course, these are just words. You need to find out for yourself that you already have enough, that you already are enough. It's up to you to discover that you can choose to receive each moment using whatever life has just dumped into your lap and whatever arrives in your hands to make happiness for yourself and for everybody. Around here, I notice the caretakers doing it like this. When they see something needs attention, they give it attention. When it's cold, they put on a sweater. When it's cold and they're not cold, but someone else looks cold, they put a sweater on someone else. When it's time to wash the dishes, they wash the dishes. When it's time to sweep the path, they sweep the path. When it's time to be sad, they're sad. When it's time to be happy, they're happy. When it's time to play, it's time to play. When it's time to study, it's time to study. This is how we take care to understand just enough in this moment. When we're willing to observe what's actually here, when we're willing to be honest with ourselves about what we feel in any given moment and how fleeting all of it is, all of it, we have this awesome opportunity to naturally express who we are, just the way we are, not perfect versions, just like this. with our caring touch, with our smile, with gratitude for everything that life is dumping on us, and to find in that process that we're enough, that life is enough. As I move into this seat, Toji, as you move into your seats, whether it's here or in the car or at your work or in your relationships, as we all move into what is on tap in each moment, let us please take care of ourselves and each other. Thank you for your practice. And it's a time when you get to ask questions or make statements. Our practice is to be pretty economical with your speech. So a couple of sentences, not a couple of paragraphs. But before we do that, I'd like just to take a moment, speaking of taking care, and people online, please feel free to unmute and participate. Just go around the room and name somebody who you're thinking of and want to take care of. And we will repeat the name, if we can, we'll try to take care of that person with you in the moment in which you say it. Okay, so anybody that comes to mind. Ekudo.
Prachi.
Prachi.
Shoho. Theo Ra.
Theo. Ajay.
John.
Kim.
Kim. Mom and Dad.
Yuka.
Yuka.
Chuck. I had a friend, Mike. He just took his own life.
So what's his name?
Mike.
His name's Michael.
Michael. Michael. I'm so sorry, Chuck. Sorry, Michael. So Dun.
Admiral.
Say it again.
Admiral.
Admiral. Rain.
Could it be Cat?
Absolutely.
Buddy.
Buddy.
Lisa.
Lisa.
Mom.
Mom.
Alex.
Alex.
Mom, Dad, and brother.
Mom, Dad, and brother. And I will include Mom, Rick, Theo, Ben. Thank you all. So, turn, what do you want to say? Anything goes. It doesn't have to be about this. What brought you up the mountain today? Why do you think you're here?
I have a comment on the question. It's lovely, by the way. What does the practice feel about ambition?
Mm.
Like going after goals and achieving those goals to attain kind of a more comfortable existence.
Mm. So I don't know if you could hear online. The question was, how would we approach in practice having a lot of ambition to make a better life for ourselves,
yeah,
to have more ease in our lives? And I don't have any problem with ambition, but I think that it has to be wholesome. So what do you think wholesome would mean in this context for you? What would wholesome ambition feel like, look like for you?
I think it's about being humble with whatever comes and appreciating what comes a lot. And I've heard many things about appreciation and just paying it forward and things coming your way following those actions.
Mm.
So I think it's a balance. It's not just grab it, you
know, right,
go after it. It's
right,
like give back as well.
Right. So it's about, forgive me, because some of you know me very well, it's about relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about you achieving something, is it?
Yeah.
To be wholesome and achieve is contextual, right? If you can remember that it's not all about you, it's about doing good, not doing evil, and doing good for everybody, then you're practicing ambition wholesomely. I don't, anybody have a problem with that? I think you can do it in a way that doesn't separate you from everybody else.
No greed, as you were saying.
Or, you know, you can acknowledge, I feel greedy, but is that who you are? That's not only who you are. And I mean, I think keeping your eye on choosing conduct that doesn't do harm as you're achieving sounds like a good balance to me. So thank you for your question. Karen.
Book by Aristotle, and he was very similar to the slash wise and everything. What was the nice ambition, which is wise, is kind of like you said, centered to yourself. But I want to add more on what we chanted today, which is the Shi Xing Ming says, good and evil is the primal disease of the mind.
Yeah.
Even virtue and vice, like this categorization, is a disease of the mind. So even as a ambitious person who is very successful for himself, or an ambitious person who is very successful for everyone, I think both these entities end up serving society because you just cannot flourish without the interconnectedness. It's just that how much like this person suffers versus this person suffers.
Thank you. Yeah, that's why I offered the merit this morning along the lines of that. We got to do better, don't we, to stop making war on ourselves so that we can stop making war in the world. So if each of us here just stopped the violence against ourselves, just that, it's a big ticket item, we would stop the violence in all the ripples from our life, and we would be contextually succeeding, including everything. Thank you, Karin. Rain.
I believe the reason I come to Jikoji is to escape my family. And I used to have like 3 Christmases, and now I don't have any. And it's a cat, and she's dying. So she is like my last link to my family. And so I'm really suffering because I'm watching my kitty fade away. And she's my companion. But it's really interesting in the family dynamics because, you know, rule, you don't talk about politics, you don't talk about religion, you don't talk about your love life. Basically, you keep it simple and you talk about gardening, the weather, and food recipes. And then when it's all said and done, it's like you vow never to go back. And then next year, you do it all over again. It's just like exhausting. And so I just cherish here and being quiet and being centered. And I really enjoyed your talk about enough because I work for really wealthy people. Really, well, I don't want to go into their story, but I do want to go into my story a little, that when I was here last and hiking and I came down and my phone had blown up. And Judy, remember that phone call?
Yes.
Well, I don't know if you know, but my brother-in-law went fishing and he didn't come home. So they found him the next day. Did you know?
No.
He didn't drown. And he was in my life for many, many, many. I was my sister's husband for 50 years. Gonna stop for a weekend and grieve. You know, I think that would be good for me. Yeah. So thank you for that.
Thank you for stopping and grieving.
You have to notice it. When the word enough, you know, that be, it seems to be like you need to do, you know, for being me. I see that you get to do whatever you want to do. You can think whatever you want to think for a time period. And after a while, it moves from impersonal. Now what you're saying, me, it's personal, making personal with myself. And I think that's a part of growth, you know, and even being unhappy to being happy, suffering, not suffering. You know, after a while, you know, a human being, you know, has to put their own puzzle together and realize that, you know, you are divine, you are beautiful. And, you know, and this is your time to be those things. You know, because I think we're getting snagged like in a fishnet. You know, we get snagged into all these different things with other people, and we're taking them on ourselves. Shouldn't do that. I don't think. I think we should just. You can help people, but don't make it personal with them. With whatever their suffering is. You know, because now I'm going home with it. No, I mean, I think as a practice too, is to, you know, I'm just thinking about the Buddha. For me, the Buddha, it was somebody who came. Went, but he also, I think he realized that, you know, suffering is not his. Suffering is something that he went through, and he came, and by going into meditation, he realized the end of suffering is to realize that, hey, guess what? I can do whatever I want to do, but there's only one way to be, and that's to be loving and kind.
You know, Jyoti, one of the things that actually Shoho taught me is that after the Buddha was awakened, he practiced for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. He wasn't done facing. We're all not done.
Didn't he go back home to his family also?
Yeah, he did. Let his wife be mad at him for a while. Thank you. Anyone? Yeah.
I have a question. What is the difference between suffering, not suffering, and happiness itself?
Happiness and
sadness.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because while Jyoti was speaking, I was thinking about, in my experience, maybe your mileage will vary, but in my experience, they are together. So if you think of our gassho, when we put our hands together, these are maybe both sides of you. You know, what you think is the ugly side you don't like and the beautiful side you like could be something like that, but it just could be almost the wholeness of you together. And from my experience is strange, because it's pretty recent, last many years, but I have discovered that my capacity to endure and accept suffering has wildly expanded my capacity to enjoy my life. So what does that mean? My suffering somehow is together with my joy and contentment. And so, not that I'm recommending you seek suffering. There's plenty. You don't need to create any new more suffering. But it exists. And for me, it is like darkness and light. There is light and then darkness. There is darkness and the light. They are together. So I guess my answer is no difference. And yet, in a relative moment, there's pain. In a relative moment, there's joy. When my kids were little, sometimes they had this little game where, like, they'd fall, you know, their knee would get scraped. And one of them said one time, well, at least I didn't break my arm, because that would have really bothered him. I just scraped my knee. So, like, in the moment of suffering, right there. So in the moment of your own suffering, there's so much that is not suffering, right? Are they separate? Almost like the suffering illuminates the not suffering. Does that help? Thanks. Good question. Yeah.
It's on the idea of satisfaction. Once you have satisfaction, you can have it anywhere. Why play the game? Why go into work every day? Why continue to achieve? I guess this is similar to the ambition question.
So what you're saying is you've got everything you need and you've taken care of the whole world's needs too.
Maybe that's not quite what I'm saying.
Well, what I'm saying, though, what I'm pointing you to, is that are you done when you've met your own individual needs? Are you done? If you sat in an Oriyoki table and you start putting all your stuff away and you know you're done because you're done, what happens to the community of this concert, of this beautiful dance we're doing together? What happens to that fabric? Are you done? If you've got your needs met, great. Enjoy that. And how can you help? The Bodhisattva path is that you're not doing that alone. You didn't get all your needs met by yourself. Millions of forces contributed to your saying, I'm done. So what can you do to say thank you? And keep saying thank you. Welcome. You can.
Your question, sometimes we think of satisfaction and fulfillment as what you might call fruition of a goal. Like we accomplish something and we get a prize or something. But I think what the teacher was talking about is the fulfillment process takes place in what you call the wholesome activity toward fulfillment. It's not just the fulfillment itself. So if we can think about satisfaction as not just what I finished raking the yard, and the yard's clean. Yeah, that's really a nice feeling. The yard's clean and the rake is put down. But there's also fulfillment in the raking itself, in the actual activity of the raking. There's satisfaction in that. So you can regard the process as well as the fruition of the process as fulfillment.
Yes, thank you, Shoho. That goes back to taking care of each moment, paying attention to each moment. You're still going to eat, right? So where did that food come from? All those things, beings that brought you that food, we're going to say a chant in a few minutes that reminds us. Maybe you'll say the chant about all the beings that brought you that food. I mean, every little step as it's coming to your mouth is part of fulfillment. So it goes on and on and on if you look up. Thank you. Karin.
Can I add something to that? I think another point, you're fulfilled or you're satisfied and not having not feeling the need to go to the office and work more. During the talk was like let's assume if you're a tree, you've grown to this size and you have all these fruits and all the birds and people are enjoying these fruits and you're having a good time being a tree. And then there's no pressure on you to grow more or have more fruits. But if there is sunlight, it's okay to grow. It's okay to have more fruits. So it's I think it's like an automatic process, and it's not a question of doing it or not doing it. It's just,
one thing, and then the last question, because I heard the bell. Did you have a question? No. Okay. Anybody else? One more. There is.
So lucky.
Anybody online? Unmute and speak if you'd like. Hi, everyone. Rand.
Yeah.
Randy, did you want to say something?
Yeah, real quick. I think it had to do with, I think, knowing satisfaction and then creating suffering. It's sometimes these pushes come from such different places. And knowing those different places. And I guess two lines that I wrote down on my potter's wheel here was one, deepening what is important and wanting something else. So, you know, and knowing the difference between the two, I don't know. It's sort of that's what just came up with my thing. And so, you know, because we're always deepening what is important, and we say, well, is that you're being greedy, or you're just being you know you don't know sufficiency and whatnot, because we all do that. And you know, I know I do it, and I know probably the people that start out as a Zen practice and they continue on their path, and they're deepening what's important, and how much is wanting something else. I don't know. So that's just the question. That's just that's just what popped up in my head. So.
Sounds like
did I unmute?
You should, you know, throw around on your potter's wheel and polish a little bit. Can you hear me?
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.